This is the Cardigan Professor coming to you live from the campus of Central State University in Wilberforce, Ohio. Now, you guys know that each month I like to pay tribute to the different months that we're in. And since April is National Poetry Month and I am the poet, I decided to change up the format this time and bring in a very special guest to join us. We are blessed and graced to have Dr. Nathan Lipps with us. Dr. Lipps is an English professor in the Department of Communications, Composition, and Languages at Central State University. And Dr. Lipps, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hello, everyone. I am Nathan Lipps, and I am honored to be here with the Cardigan Professor for WCSU. This is my fifth year at Central State University. I'm a professor in the Communication, Composition, and Language Department. Originally from Michigan, grew up on a small farm. You'll see some of that in this book, the rural landscape, heartbreak, the environment, and other musings. I'm now going to read two poems. This first one is titled Cost of Living. I'm here with a day and its gentle dying. The dog cleaning herself on the couch loudly. I'm thinking of this maintenance we've perfected. Autumn, inevitably. What apples remain, rotting towards something misunderstood as waste. There's always been enough. Tomorrow rolls along because of this excess, in spite of it. Our time split by memory, split by the desire to simply forget knowledge and its birdsong. Of course we exist. We make this so by giving ourselves over to it. And this poem is titled Cheap Beer. If there's less rain this year, or if the grain prices get goofy because a couple dudes want a bit more, more farmers will kill themselves easily enough. We are rarely taught to speak of it if it hurts. To listen for the wind to die down so we can spray the fields free of life unwanted, yes. But to hear a voice lost in looking is the static of a universe that slams our prayers against each other without a sound. Taught, each one of us, to use the many guns we grew up with, the shovels or pitchforks. Taught how to be safe, not to point them at each other or ourselves. The danger understood, respected even, learned and tucked away for another day. When we're older and caught in that self-built trap of love, when the rain is slow and billionaires drink that good shit on the moon. Thank you.
Well, all right. Well, thank you for sharing that. And it's really interesting that you bring up your rural background because I'm from rural Mississippi.
Okay.
So as I was reading through your collection, I was like, oh, my God, you know, was he looking in my childhood, you know, because I, too, kind of got out and explored nature. So it was really refreshing and enlightening to see someone else kind of bring those things to light. Right. So we're going to jump right into this. You know, this is your new collection built around the fire poems. I really am admiring your cover art.
Well, thank you.
So let's talk about how your cover art kind of came to be and what is the connection to the pieces within the book.
Sure. Yeah, the cover art is a piece done by the street artist from France. She goes by the name Twotma, I think. Is how you might pronounce it. But I was invited to go to Paris this past summer to be a guest instructor for one of my good friends' poetry workshop. His name's Adam J. Gellings. And so I went there and helped with that for a little bit. And as I was wandering around the streets, I saw this art and it caught my eye. And so I had to get a print, and then a month or so later, looking at it on my wall, I figured that absolutely should be the cover of the book.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Well, it's good to know. You know, it's really cool because Paris is so influential to a lot of great writers of literature, you know. We think of Baldwin, of course, like he's the first that comes to mind. But it is a lot. So, hey, you've added yourself to that collection, right?
I mean, I was there briefly, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, hey, you have a book now, right?
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so talking about the book, let's start at the beginning. Let's talk about which selection out of part one. And I'll tell you, for me, Cost of Living, that was one that I really, really liked. So can we talk about that one a little bit, share a little bit of backstory to it?
Sure. Let me take a look at this. A lot of these poems are, I guess one could say, at least partially autobiographical. And so this is one where, you know, the dog is my dog, of course. I think I was also experimenting with trying to remove the I, which is why it opens with just the am. There's no proper pronoun there. The removing of the self from a poem without totally removing the sense of self. Yeah, so what about it specifically are you...
Well, I just wanted to know, like, because I'm going to tell you when I was reading this, and you brought up a good point about how you used, like, no personal pronouns. It reminded me, interestingly, of Lift Every Voice.
Okay.
If you listen to it, there are no personal pronouns within it, and everything is like, you know, unity as one. And as I'm thinking about the title of this particular piece, and I'm thinking about the way that, you know, the world is going, and, you know, salaries are not increasing to go along with the cost of living and things like that, you know, I just wanted to know, what were you thinking about? But cool.
Cost of living in the common expression of how much it costs to buy milk and gas and rent and all the things, but also in the larger sense that the cost of living is a more of a metaphorical, ideological thing. If ultimately it's even to be alive means you will die. It's, I guess, the ultimate cost. I think, you know, death, of course, is a pretty common poetic obsession for a lot of people. So.
Right, cool. All right. Like I say, this is one of the ones from this section that really stood out to me. So for you, which one is Nathan? Which one is the, hey, if you read this, you really get me in this particular section?
From section one. It's a tough thing to say.
But, you know, that's the problem of the greats, right? You have so many selections to pick from, you don't know which direction to go.
Yeah, I mean, you could pick any one, and it would be me, I think. Or I would say Foreign. It's the second poem, and I would just say that one out of the first section because maybe it's one of the oldest ones from that section.
Okay.
And it's where I was trying to, in some ways, combine personal experience with a slightly political agenda, I guess.
Okay. And, you know, it's interesting that you kind of went into that. I'm looking at the format of the book itself, and just thinking about how each poem really does flow. Like, for me, it flows from in part one, like I can see the transition between each one. So were you intentional in doing that, or was that just something that kind of it fell into place?
And you're talking about the ordering of the sections.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was definitely some intention. And, of course, I tried many different versions of the form. Yeah, I think the first one, it's establishing, it's more historical about, I guess, my history. It's more about the landscape and the larger ideas that I grew up with, you know, religion, the patriarchy, the planet, the environment. And then section two is more about love and broken hearts and, you know, moving through that journey.
Yeah.
And I guess section three is just kind of moving past that into, again, like the bigger things beyond the personal, trying to, you know, stop dwelling on myself a little bit. Yeah.
Okay. I really did enjoy the way that everything went together. And, you know, moving from part one, going into part two, you know, divorce is something that is, you know, starting to be common, you know, but it's because people are really realizing that, you know, sometimes it's better to heal and be alone than to be miserable, mm-hmm. you know, trying to maintain something. So when you were writing this section, right, you know, they say that there is a such thing as therapeutic fiction. Mm-hmm. Now, as I was reading your pieces, I was like, oh my God, like I'm starting to feel free again, you know, like I felt a connection to what you were writing. So when you put this together, what was in your mind? Were you just thinking, let me get this out, or let me try to be a good segue for someone who really needs some help?
It probably started with the former, you know, just get it out. Mm-hmm. There's definitely a number of poems that didn't make the cut because they were too self-pitying, you know. So that's how they started, kind of. And then in time, when you're out of that moment, mm-hmm. things, just clarity, I guess. And you realize, I don't know, maybe you were wrong about a few things.
Yeah, because sometimes you get blinded by certain things, you know.
Yeah, grief could be overwhelming. And then once it subsides,
yes,
you see the bigger picture.
Yes. Okay, cool. And, you know, you're a professor and you teach composition. And we're going to kind of take a break from the text for just a moment.
Sure.
Thinking about how you write and then thinking about the students that you teach, if you saw a student that had like this potential, how would you motivate them? What would be some things that you would say to them to get them going, to not be afraid to put their word out there? Because, you know, we do work on a very interesting campus, and our student demographic, you know, they're very creative. They just need a little guidance to, you know, get that creativity out. So what would you, you know, offer to them?
Sure. I suppose if it was one of my students, the first thing is every student is different, and what based upon what I know or have observed about that individual, what would best serve them? Like, what do they specifically need to hear? Mm-hmm. So that would, of course, be different case by case. But I think just letting them know that if they want to write, let's say, for their own sake, whether it's an essay or poetry or stories, that there's a long growth curve, kind of like there's going to be things that they write that maybe years later they'll be embarrassed by. There's going to be like failures along the way. And that's something that they should celebrate and not be afraid of. I remember when I was an undergrad, there was this like almost self-imposed pressure that everything I wrote had to be perfect, and it was all so far from perfect.
You know, but isn't that the plight of an English major? You know, we put all this pressure on us to be perfect with our
especially
words.
Especially when you're young, you have these grand ideas, and
you
know, you're kind of wrapped up in the whole image of even what it means to be a writer or artist, and you kind of lose track of what you're actually really doing.
Right. Well, okay, cool. Well, thank you for that. You know, as you see, I like talking about teaching, and I love talking about writing and just all of that. And I'm sitting here and thinking about like your undergrad experience to where you are teaching now. In this conversation, and you know, it may seem like we're kind of going everywhere, but it's all connected. Because it all is going to come back to the book. So when you think about your undergrad and your graduate experience, how did that prepare you to be able to come to Central and teach, you know, beautiful words like you're doing? Like, what led you here?
Yeah, it's a very curvy journey. Like many, you know, it's hard to really summarize briefly, but in some ways it feels right. It felt destined. It doesn't, it, you know, feels like I belong. I'm a first generation college graduate.
Okay.
I understand that aspect, and being in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
I mean, a very rural campus is what I mean. Not, right. You know, it's a beautiful campus and a beautiful place, but it does feel, you know, you're out in the fields.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but those are things I'm very comfortable with and that I think I can bring. And it's hard to really.
Okay. Well, you know, it's no perfect answer. I just wanted to know because, you know, this is my second year here. So I'm really starting to learn my colleagues. And, you know, I'd seen you in different meetings and everything. And then I heard that you had written a book. And I was like, oh my God, I got to talk to him and let him, you know, share some things about himself in his book. So,
right.
Well, back to the book, right? The final part. I don't want to say the part three because we're not, in Jersey, right? we don't have to throw that on. But the final part. I like how you ended with the selection that you did because for me, it felt like everything was complete. Like, I felt like you made your point. And you were saying that it's okay to grow. You're saying it's okay to hurt. You're saying it's okay to move on from that hurt. You're okay to be where you are. So with that said, thinking about part three, do you see yourself creating anything else from that point? Is this the end for you? Because, like I say, I felt that you were done. But, you know, sometimes some great writers want to put on one more piece to kind of bring it, you know, out a little more. Are you done with this series? Or, like, are we going to see a continuation? What's coming up with that?
There hopefully will be more books.
Okay.
Poetry and other genres. But as far as some of the specific personal historical dwellings or themes, probably won't return to those very much, no.
Okay.
Although I'm sure the autobiographical will show up at least a little bit here and there in the future, yeah.
Okay.
But it'll be new stories.
Okay, cool. So, you know, this is just a, you know, brief start. I wanted to kind of introduce my audience to another great writer because, like I say, that's what The Cardigan Professor is all about, introducing people to writers that they've, you know, never heard of or, you know, need to hear of. So I really do appreciate you coming in and talking with me today. So you know that this is not going to be the last time I have you come on the show. So keep that in mind. And number two, tell us where we can buy copies, where we can follow you on social media, all of that good info.
Sure. I do have a personal website. It's my full name, nathanlips.com. Mm-hmm. And through there, you can find links to purchase the book, which is being put out by Stephen F. Austin University Press.
Ooh.
And through their website, of course, and I'm sure you can find it through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or, you know, if you have a local bookstore, walk in and see if they'll order it for you. That's always nice to do.
Okay, and maybe we can see about doing something here on campus, you know, maybe do a stage side chat series, and we can introduce you to the students that are on campus.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, y'all, again, this is The Cardigan Professor. I'm coming to you live from the campus of Central State University. And in honor of National Poetry Month, go forward, be creative, and write a word. Until next time, bye.